call the meeting of the Ways and Means Committee to order. First order of business is to approve the minutes of the prior meeting. Representative Gunther, move approval.
I will move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. First bill on our agenda tonight is Senate File 444, and the chair would move to substitute the language of House File 68 into Senate File 444 to be adopted. Any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Chair moves to refer Senate File 444 to the General Register. Representative Poppy, if you could explain, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the omnibus liquor bill. Craig Stone is on his way back, I think, any second with the DE3 amendment, which sometime earlier today apparently got misplaced. But briefly, I think everybody kind of knows what's in it. The reason we're in front of Ways and Means is because one of the things we did in this year's omnibus liquor bill is change what Representative Kahn did a few years ago. So right now it's legal to serve alcohol, beer and wine in the state capitol, but only in the Rathskeller. The Department of Administration would like to expand that, and under conditions that they set when people have permits, they would like to be able to expand that, the alcohol sales, to other parts of the capitol. Now that it's renovated, I think they're thinking about potentially weddings and events up in the gallery, the new third floor spaces. So it would be no red wine, because we don't want anything to stain if it's spilled. And it would, the liquor license would go through whatever catering company gets the new contract. And the DE3 amendment, I think, takes care of the, and we can have Mr. Marks verify this, but I think the DE3 amendment, the reason it was here is because we're setting up a special revenue account, and evidently that caused it to come in front of, need to come in front of Ways and Means. The idea is that any monies that were generated, any profit, would go into this special revenue account that we use for maintenance and restoration of our fine state capital. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions, or if we want to have Mr. Marks or counsel make sure that I'm on the right track here.
Maybe before we get started with remarks, now that the DE3 has been circulated, the chair would move the DE3 amendment.
We have it.
Yeah,
it was just circulated. It hasn't come yet.
I don't have it yet.
Getting done there.
Thank you. All right,
then. Yes. Thank you. No, I'm right. It just makes no sense.
Everybody now got the DE3?
Don't have it.
No, he ran out of copies.
The DE3 was being passed out because the one that we had was incorrect. So it's the S0444 DE3 that we are waiting on to be distributed. Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair, do you want to have Mr. Marks or staff, whoever wants to comment, kind of run through what the amendment did and make sure everybody knows that we're taking care of the problem or the issue that made it come to Ways and Means?
Okay. Everybody has it now?
I think we have
it. Okay. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, members, it's Section 10 that begins on the bottom of page 5 that's the relevant section here that establishes the authority for an on-sale wine and malt liquor license in the Capitol. And then beginning at the last sentence on the page talks, says that any revenue that fees charged or profits earned by the Department of Administration must be deposited in a capital revenues account in the Special Revenue Fund, and then they're appropriated to the Commission of Administration for capital preservation purposes, so that it is creating an account in the Special Revenue Fund. There is no fiscal note on the bill, and we really don't have a good estimate as to what might, what kind of revenue this might raise, so that's the, we never asked for a fiscal note because of that. So.
Questions on the DE3? Representative Hailstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hoppe, I'm not going to ask specifically about that provision. I know that that is the only reason why this bill is in the Ways and Means Committee. However, I do want to ask you about the controversial provisions in the bill. There were a number of amendments that were offered in the Commerce Committee and a number of stakeholders who had serious concerns with the bill. And my question is, have you done anything between Commerce and here to address the issues, and is there yet peace in the valley on the controversial provisions in the bill?
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hailstrom, thank you. There is not yet peace in the valley. My hope is that we get the bill passed here tonight, onto the floor, send it to conference committee. I've had a number of conversations with people trying to move towards peace in the valley, and my hope is at the end of the day, the goal here is to, when we're raising especially the caps for the small brewers, we'd like to get to a point where they're not coming back to us every year and looking to raise that, and we'd like to have peace in the valley there where we can, I don't know what the number is, but where we can get a hard number so that that's not an issue that the legislature, we can't bind future legislatures, but we'd like to have an agreement so that we don't have to deal with this every year, and I'm hoping that by the end of, when it comes back to the floor, assuming we get the conference, we'll have something that maybe we'll never have 100% peace in the valley, but that everybody can live with.
Representative Hailstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hoppe. It's my understanding that those controversial provisions are not in the Senate bill, and that one of the reasons why there is not peace in the valley is because those folks have come back after folks had thought there already was agreement and we were not going to see these kinds of provisions continuing to come back. So, Representative Hoppe, I understand that you may not have been the chair at the time. However, there are people who were here at the time, and I believe that if you continue on this path, people, I think, prefer more of the Senate language without these controversial provisions in this bill.
Other questions on the DE3? Representative Carlson.
Sure. I'm looking at the language here dealing with service at the Capitol, and it says on one line, may specify those areas where service is being requested. I know some of our colleges and universities, when they've had fundraisers on campus, they get kind of short-term permit for a fee, and then they can serve like beer or wine or something for their foundation fundraisers or whatever. They usually get that from the local city, and there's reference here to St. Paul. But are these, in your view, then temporary licensure licenses where they would pay a fee for a given event, or just how do you envision that working? Because it does play into what we were talking about earlier with the revenue that would be generated if there was a fee for each event, or is it short-term, long-term? And in, while you're thinking about your answer to that one, the following line says that a food service vendor, well, an example of that would be Tahir here in the Capitol Complex, is already here and would be in the category of food service vendor. But then you say, or other vendor. And I find that language kind of interesting. My mother, who's deceased, so I don't have a vested interest in this, but she had a very prosperous catering company. And they would have different events, and they would be serving at times wine or beer or whatever, just like these events here. So are you talking about people who might cater when you say other or another vendor? And then has anybody looked at what the contract is with Tahir? I know when we have wanted to have coffee, for some of our committee meetings and so on. When I chaired one of the committees a few years ago, I used to at least once a year, sometimes twice, bring in coffee and donuts, and I was told because of the contract I had to get it through Tahir, because they had the contract for the complex. So could other caterers or other vendors come in? So that's I'm just trying to give you a little background as to the reason I'm raising the question. And then usually there's fees that are attached to whoever comes in, if they can come in.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. Good questions. And we're doing this. This language was brought to me by the Department of Administration. The one word that they used to describe this was decorum. I mean, they don't want, you know, they're going to have events in different places of the Capitol, again, I think, to take advantage of some of the nice new spaces. And all of there will be a liquor license issued to whoever the new catering company is. When Tahir's contract is up, that's when this will start, assuming this all passes. So whoever gets the new catering contract to do the food service at the Capitol will also have a liquor license. And I believe it's up to the Department of Administration to decide if they want to have a different vendor come in. They would have to work that out with their contract with whoever the provider is. But if they wanted to have a separate provider for weddings or for, you know, committee hearings or whatever it would be, they would have to work that out with them. The Department of Administration will okay anything that happens here.
I didn't realize that it kicked in relative to, I only mentioned Tahir because they're the ones that currently have the contract, so whomever would have the contract then. But it does seem a little bit unclear then if the new vendor or Tahir, if they continue, you want to have somebody that's having a wedding or some special event might have a caterer that they would prefer. And usually in a public building like this, I should say probably always, because my mother had to be very careful. She had to present her license and all of that when she would be in different locations. Probably the only exception was when they would cater an event at a private home. But if they were in a public venue, then, you know, there were a lot of rules relative to being a licensed caterer. I just think that's rather vague there. I don't want to tie up the committee tonight on that, but I think that maybe admin or somebody has to look carefully at that language if you want to have a level playing field when they enter into those contracts where other, as you say in the bill, vendors might want, because the consumer might choose to have another vendor other than who has the Capitol Complex under a contract. So I'll stop there unless you want to comment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, thank you for bringing this up. I think these are valid concerns. I like this provision. I like the idea that we're letting the public have more use of the people's house. But I really like the idea that the Department of Administration and the city are going to have a say in this and make sure that it's done in a respectful, tasteful manner. And I will pass along your concerns to the Department of Administration, and maybe they need to tighten up the language, or maybe that's, I don't know, but maybe that's something they're going to take care of in the contract or the bidding for contracts for whoever the new provider will be. But I appreciate your comments, and I will make sure I pass that along to admin.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I might just very quickly, not because my mother was in the business, but when I have been involved with setting up events, political fundraisers usually, when we look at different venues, then sometimes they would say, but you have to use our caterer. And that venue would often have a contract with a given caterer. They might not be there on a continuing basis like we're talking about with the food service here in the Capitol Complex, but they would have this arrangement, you'd have to use their caterer. So then if you wanted to use another caterer, you'd have to find another venue. That's what I've been talking about, a level playing field to make sure that the customer, the public, has some option in terms of who would provide the food as long as they're a licensed entity.
Agreed.
Representative Lublin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this just raises all kinds of questions for me, too, and I appreciate that Representative Carlson has asked some. But so we just spent $300 some odd million to renovate that gorgeous building that is the legacy for, you know, Minnesota. And now the idea that we're just this provision for allowing liquor to be sold at the Capitol is extremely broad. And so suppose that there's an event there and somebody gets roaring drunk and damages something in the building. Who is responsible for that?
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I am not an attorney, and I think that would be spelled out in whatever contract people, you know, whatever they get, if they're going to have a wedding there or whatever it would be. Anything that's going to happen, the Department of Administration wants to make sure that they do it with great care because they have the same level of respect and, I guess, deep feeling for the building that we all do. That's, for example, one of the things they're not going to do is ever serve red wine. Because if something does happen where something's spilled, they don't want it to stain the marble or stain one of the floors. And I will, if you'd like, I can come and visit with somebody from the Department of Admin. I think your concerns are, I think we all, to one extent or another, have the same concerns, and we want to make sure that beautiful building that we spent all the money on is going to be beautiful for the next 100 years at least.
Oh, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hoppe. I mean, I know everybody's got good intentions here, and I know the Department of Administration is, you know, this is their baby. But I just worry that, you know, we have to set the rules in law as we're opening this up. It just worries me that we're opening it too far, and that we're, you know, we ought to put in some requirement. I don't even know how the idea that you could do damage that would be so severe. I don't know if you could get insurance or what kind of insurance you could get to cover an event for this. If you're having people in there who are, you know, potentially intoxicated, so that's one thing. The other thing I wonder about this is there's no kind of time limitation. I know that a number of years ago, I think before I was elected, there was some kind of a scandal here in the state office building, and then we banned liquor from the state office building. Because, yeah, so, you know, put away those beers, guys. Now, we haven't banned cannabis yet, so that's still open.
That was before.
Right. But anyway, I just wonder about this, that I don't know if the rule, I think it's a House rule that bans liquor in this building. And, of course, the public was quite outraged that during work hours people were drinking. I guess that was the source of the scandal. And yet here in this provision there's no limitation having to do with during working hours. I mean, is it contemplated here that during lunch you can go down in the Capitol cafeteria and buy a beer with your lunch? Is that kind of the idea? Or because it isn't spelled out here, and if that isn't the intention, I think some work needs to be done.
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, good questions. I had some of the same questions. The Department of Administration is going to issue permits that are time limited, so you might have an event where you start at 5 o'clock and it ends at 8 or something like that. I think a lot of these things are going to be spelled out in whatever contracts that they have for people. I share your concerns about this building. I don't want people to be overserved. I don't want there to be accidents. I don't want people to spill, to do any damage to the building. But the Department of Administration shares your same concerns. And these are all things that we're talking about. I can have somebody come and meet with you if it would allay some of your concerns about it. But it's not going to be during the workday. It's going to be for specific events. I think they're thinking things like art exhibits in that third floor gallery space where people walk around, and when I hear art, I think, you know, ducks or pheasants, so I'm sure it'll be nice art like that. I thought that'd be funnier. Representative Lubin, we can certainly come and visit with you. I share your concerns. I think we all are concerned about the building, and none of us want to do anything to disturb the decorum.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, if I can just finish up here, you know, and I appreciate that, Representative Hoppe. You know, like I said before, I'm sure everybody has the best intentions, but we're voting on legislation, and the legislation is just wide open right now. And I think it needs to be, I think more of this needs to be considered and worked into the actual legislation so that we all know what we're doing when we're voting on this thing, and everyone knows what the rules are.
Representative Cornish.
Representative Hoppe, is just beer and wine. It's not hard liquor?
Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, that is correct. Just beer and wine and only beer and wine that are produced in Minnesota. And it's not
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, it's not extended to the snack bar on the second floor.
Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish, it would depend on whether they're part of the catering license for whoever gets the new license. I think that at one point there could be people that we could have an event that would be out on the loge, which is the second floor little balcony area. I think that that could be looked at somewhere down the road. Again, I don't think it would be during business hours.
Okay,
Representative Cornish.
I'm going to vote for your bill anyway.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to be real quick because I also am a caterer and a food license operator, and I have a caterer's license to bring liquor to events, which I do a lot, and I do understand all of our concerns about the rules and the how comes and what ifs and all this stuff. I hope that there will be a committee that will dive deep into this stuff because I've never been on a public property before serving liquor, like your mother, Representative Carlson. And there are lots of rules and things to follow and what time can we serve and all those things. So I hope our committee lets that kind of be handled by somebody else. But I do think it's good to have this option. But I think someone else is going to make up all those rules. That would be much more detailed than we'd have time to do tonight. So that's all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, seeing no more debate, all in favor of the DE3, say aye, please.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. DE3 is adopted.
Thank you,
Representative Hoppe. Any other questions relative to the...
Don't we still have to...
Representative Rubinius.
Thank you. Just quickly, okay, I hear this. We've got to have rules, et cetera. Is there rulemaking authority in this bill?
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rubinius, there is not, but currently it's legal to sell alcohol in the state capitol, and none of these concerns were addressed in the current legislation that Representative Kahn passed. The only change that we're making here is expanding the areas where it could be served. Currently it's only in the Rathskeller, and we're expanding that to the rest of the capitol. And other than that, I don't believe that there are any changes.
Representative Rubinius.
However, what I was hearing in this committee is we have got to have some bumpers, some rules, and you don't have a rulemaking authority. So the question is, if it's not in this bill, does administration have general rulemaking authority, which would cover this? And that would be a question for the floor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, that is an excellent question. I will get that answer and have the answer ready on the floor, but I'm 99% sure that the answer is yes based on my conversations with the Department of Admin.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the chair removes his motion to move the SF 444 as amended to the general register. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair member.
Representative Hoppe. Next order of business is House File 1415, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1415 is the fantasy sports bill. Mr. Chair, there is an amendment that I would like to take up prior to a discussion of the bill. It's 0441.
Okay, the first thing I will do is move to refer SF. I'm sorry, House File 1415 to the General Register. We do have an amendment. To your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The contents of this further clarifies the responsibilities for the documentation of background checks for partners of a significant threshold within each one of the purveyors of these games to the state, as well as it increases the licensing fee in order to enable the commission to regulate the requests in the bill.
Discussion on the amendment. I will move the amendment. The 0441 amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for many of you in the room, this is probably a bit of Groundhog Day from last biennium. Former Representative Sanders carried this bill in the House. This is in large measure a redo of that with some updates that you just adopted onto the bill that I think even further assures its support by the membership. But just as a reminder in terms of what we're talking about here, I'll give you a little background on the bill on the fantasy sports industry. More than 57 million Americans participate in some form of fantasy sports. It is regarded as, in Minnesota alone, 900,000 residents participate in fantasy sports. 167,000 of those participate in daily fantasy sport contests. The bill before you and the contents therein it has already been passed into legislation by 10 other states. And the purpose of this is to provide further clarity for the prohibition for minors to participate in these games and to make sure that we're doing everything we can to nullify their desire to participate online. It also further strengthens the regulatory environment for those that are purveying these games to the public by providing for background checks for those with a threshold of an ownership of about 15%. This bill does not expand the gaming industry per se. It just merely provides a specific set of rules that operators must follow in order to continue to operate in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, there are a number of, I understand, testifiers that wish to speak to the bill. I have a couple of mine as well, and they will certainly be available for questions. Your membership has heard from them in the past, and so I will await your decision.
Chair recognizes that there are a few people that did contact before that will be allowed to testify. The bill has been heard in other committees with public testimony. So the testifiers, if they would, limit their your comments, please, to 2 minutes, and also restrict them to the remarks relative to the fiscal note, because that's really why the stop was here. So at this point, if there is some testimony, I guess we have. First is Jake Grassel. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jake Grassel, and I am here on behalf of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. I won't rehash all the stuff that's went on in the policy committees. I will point out, though, the difference that it's important to point out that there's a difference between daily fantasy sports and season-long fantasy sports. We consider, along with the state of Nevada, many others in the industry, experts in the gambling industry, that daily fantasy sports are gambling, which is relevant to the fiscal note and the finance behind it. Minnesota already has an overabundance of opportunity to gamble. We have 20-plus casinos, the lottery, a large amount of charitable gambling in our state. The market is saturated. In order to add additional players, DFS will not add a positive economic impact to the state, but rather will operate at a net loss to the state of Minnesota economically. The proceeds for DFS must come from people who are currently gambling on one of these many opportunities, or you'll need to create a new stream of revenue, and perhaps that is the most troubling part, this new stream of revenue. As we look at who is gambling on DFS, it is predominantly young male sports enthusiasts who are likely to gamble. This group is at a higher risk for gambling addiction and already has little disposable income. In either scenario, whether we are taking away from current gambling or creating a new revenue stream, this is money that's being spent by Minnesotans in a different area than on Minnesota businesses, and it's largely going to be shipped out of state to out-of-state players and to the operators in New York and Massachusetts. It's not money that's staying in Minnesota. Finally, the additional costs that this will bring to our state through problem gambling are wholly unacceptable burden to the state of Minnesota. Problem gambling experts have called DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, as addictive as crack cocaine to the 2 to 5% of adults with the gambling gene. This is likely larger in the actual player demographic that is using DFS. These problem gamblers will pose a significant financial burden to our state, as independent studies have concluded that, conservatively estimated, there are $3 of costs for every dollar that their state receives in revenue. While the DFS operators will be taking money out of our state without paying taxes in Minnesota, I might add, we as taxpayers will be left footing the bill for the harm that they cause. This is a bad deal for Minnesota taxpayers and should be voted down. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel. Questions?
Yeah.
Representative Cornish?
What was your last name, sir?
Grassel.
Mr. Grassel, what do you mean expansion of gambling when you're against gambling expansion? Give me a quick definition of what that means.
Gambling expansion would be the introduction of new gambling sources into the state of Minnesota.
Okay, you don't,
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, you don't mean the number of people is it going to expand then? You mean just the equipment?
Mr. Grassel.
Mr. Cornish, Representative Cornish, our members across the state have varying views on what contemplates gambling, whether that's additional players, whether it's additional machines, whether it's additional companies, operators coming into the state, adding to, you know, the more public options. We fought that in the lottery, as many of you see, when it was play at the pump a few years ago. So additional people coming in, I know that our group has done a lot to try to bring out studies that show the impacts on people gambling to discourage that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, because you said that the same people would be gambling and it wouldn't increase the revenue, so I'm just wondering what you meant by expansion of gambling. It seems like there'd be no harm if the same people are gambling anyway, would just choose another form of gambling, and I like to gamble myself. But every time I go to a Ducks Unlimited banquet, a Deer Hunters banquet, I mean, there's so many things that are open to gambling. I mean, you make it sound like it's a terrible thing, but we I go to 600 at one event, there's 400 at another event, and they're pouring money into the pull tabs to try to win a gun or something. So it just seems blown out of proportion is all.
And Mr. Representative, what I meant by taking away from those other streams, if you look at our charitable gambling, our charitable gambling money stays in the state of Minnesota. When you start gambling on DFS, that doesn't stay in the state of Minnesota. That's a net that's a net economic loss to the state of Minnesota, Representative.
Or what,
Representative Cornish?
Or what you can consider a free market. Mm-hmm. That's all I got.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Wilkinius.
Well, I think I hear you're saying free market, and you're saying, no, it's a costly market. Do we have a fiscal note on how much we will have to pay for problem gambling as a result of this?
Representative,
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I don't believe that the fiscal note that was provided to us addressed that issue.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, it does seem that we should understand the dollars involved. I don't know whether they're this big or this big. And if that clearly is an issue, because it will come out of our taxpayer dollars, without income to the state, as I understand it. So we need to understand that issue. I mean, what's the cost to Minnesota of doing this?
Representative Aubrey?
So noted.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel.
Thank you.
Next is Meredith Campbell. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Good evening. Meredith Campbell from Minnesota Family Council. I'm here testifying in opposition to HF1415, which is in effect a bill to legalize online sports gambling. HF1415 is based on a legal fiction that daily fantasy sports gambling isn't really gambling. But let's be clear. This bill legalizes a growing form of gambling. Daily fantasy sports betting is gambling because it includes the three essential elements of gambling: consideration, prize, and chance. The fact that daily fantasy sports is gambling is understood by those in the gambling industry. Advocates of daily fantasy sports have blurred the distinction between daily fantasy sports and season-long fantasy sports to seek to legitimize what is clearly a gambling activity in Minnesota. Season-long fantasy sports is a recreational activity involving skill and performance and does not constitute gambling, whereas daily fantasy sports involves wagering and chance. And we urge you to consider the financial implications of the bill. Out-of-state, for-profit gambling companies will essentially enjoy a free ride tax-wise, while charitable groups in Minnesota are currently taxed at a very high rate. I would draw your attention to some written testimony that was submitted by Mr. Lund, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. And I just point out that his letter states that daily fantasy sports is currently dominated by two out-of-state groups. And this year, charities in Minnesota will have paid the state close to $60 million and donated another $60 million to Minnesota communities. He's asking for a level playing field. And I wonder if this bill provides that. Furthermore, as you just heard in prior testimony, the expansion of gambling in Minnesota could have likely have an impact on the cost of other government services. I don't believe that this financial impact has been adequately explored, and I believe it's necessary to do so before passage of this bill out of the committee. We have testified in other committees about our policy concerns, that gambling is highly addictive, that it's a predatory business practice, and that it targets young people for gambling. And because of these economic and social concerns, we oppose this bill and the expansion of gambling in Minnesota, and we urge you to oppose it as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Gatto.
Thank you.
Next is Ann Krisnick. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ann Krisnick. I'm the Executive Director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, which is made up of Catholics, Protestants, Jews, and Muslims from across the state. We represent about three-quarters of those Minnesotans that are part of a faith community, and the JRLC has consistently opposed any expansion of gambling. So I want to directly address the issue that you raised. I think one of the most striking facts to me was you heard the testimony just a minute ago that the industry reports 57 million people participate in fantasy sports. The trade, their own Fantasy Sports Trade Association report is that 10 million of those are under 18. And the biggest concern that we have when we look at any expansion of gambling is the impact on younger Minnesotans. If I'm a 17-year-old, I can't go into a casino. There are all kinds of things that I can't do, but I can access these on my phone, from my iPad, from my computer, when I'm at home, when I'm at school, when I'm on my job. And we have seen in our faith communities over and over again the impact that gambling addiction has on families, the loss of jobs, the stripping of family assets, the impact of parental availability to children. So we have serious concerns about any expansion. The cost is obviously an issue since there's a cost to the state, but our big concern is the impact of this on our younger Minnesotans, and we urge you not to approve the bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Lublin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure you're the right person to ask this of. Maybe Representative Albright can help me on this too. But we're talking about this as though it's not happening now, as though the choice is between having it not be there, or this bill which presents it to Minnesotans, right? And I think that's not really what we're dealing with here, right, Representative Albright? This is something, as I'm understanding this, people are doing this, and this bill attempts to just put some protections around that. I'm not really clear. I mean, the question about taxation and not level playing field, I'm not sure why we don't tax this. If we can regulate it, surely we could tax it. But I just want to be clear here, because I wasn't in those other committees, I'm sorry, But am I correct? I mean, the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition seems to be taking a position that if we're against this bill, that there won't be this gambling. But that's not really right, is it?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Liebling, you are correct on both fronts. This exists and has existed for a number of years in the state of Minnesota. And hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans do participate in these daily as well as season-long games of skill. Let me correct the record from just the point of view that you've heard the definition from prior testimony. This is not gambling. This is a game of skill. And pursuant to 2006, Congress passed a law, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, which makes it illegal to gamble on the Internet. This is a game of skill. Let me make that very, very clear. They paint it as gambling, but it is not. And to your point, Representative Liebling, that's exactly what this legislation is trying to do. It is trying to put safeguards in place so that the industry itself can also can police itself, but also provide the safeguards for minors, as this testifier is suggesting, that 17-year-olds might just get on their Internet service or their telephone and utilize one of these sites. That is exactly why we need this legislation, so we can protect minors from participating in these games of skill. So thank you for the question.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Yes. Ms. Campbell?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, first I just want to clarify that in Minnesota it's unclear whether this is considered gambling or not, and that hinges on the question of whether it's a game of skill or a game of chance. And the House research memo that was prepared in support of the bill recognizes that there are people arguing on both sides of that, and is very clear that this bill, this is the language in the House research report, House File 1415 authorizes daily fantasy sports under state law. So the bill is very clearly designed to remove any question about whether this is gambling and whether it's lawful. The other issue that we just want to raise, and I don't have the data with me on this, but I'm happy to provide it to you, is looking at once in the states where it's clear that this is lawful activity, the level of advertising and promotion is significantly higher than those states where it's unclear, and significant amounts of that advertising is directed at younger individuals. And so, you know, we come back to our concern is really the impact of this, especially on our younger Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it seems like, based on what you said, that your quibble might be with the content of the bill, not the existence of the bill. I mean, if there's a question about advertising, which I take your point. I mean, I don't love this stuff at all. I mean, I don't really, nobody that I know is engaging in it. I'm not that familiar with it. But, you know, I mean, it would be great if we could wave the wand and say nobody should do anything we don't approve of or we think is unhealthy for them. But we can't do that. And so to the degree that this bill is an attempt to sort of get our arms around protecting people that are engaging in it and keeping out the bad actors and so on, if there's an issue about advertising, maybe, I don't know if there's a way that we can deal with that in the bill. Maybe Representative Albright would be willing to discuss something like that.
Representative Albright. Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, this bill has a number of stops along the path to make it into law, and so we are certainly happy to undertake a conversation about the advertising concerns that you raise and others, and we'll note that and carry it along with us as we travel along this road.
Any other questions? Representative Knobloch.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Albright. I know that a fantasy sports bill of some sort was on the floor either last year or the year before, and I think you were the author of it. Is this the same bill, or does it differ? And if it does differ, how does it differ?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch. This is, in large respect, the bill that was chief authored by Representative Sanders.
Excuse me.
2 years ago. What we have done in recognition of the discussion in committee over the course of 2 years is actually moved to strengthen the guidelines and the parameters in terms of for enforcement and for prohibition of minors to participate, as well as recognizing some of the other features of the background checks for those that are participating as owners in the purveyors of these games.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Knobloch.
And Representative Albright, was that bill also a Daly's fantasy sports betting bill, or was that did that perhaps only allow for a season-long situation, or at least not a daily situation?
I believe.
Representative Albright.
And Representative Knobloch, I believe that that included both the season-long as well as the daily games.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. And final testifier is Alan. I'm sorry. We've got Representative Wagenius.
Yeah, thank you.
Was that of the testifier? I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
Maybe the test. Well, let's see. have you been to the tax committee? And the reason I ask is it is clear that there are going to be costs imposed upon the state. And I would like to see the state reimbursed, if this goes through, for the costs imposed on it. And that seems to me to be in the jurisdiction of the tax committee. So my question is, have you gone to the tax committee and do you plan to go?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, we have not made that stop in tax, but I'm certainly happy to undertake a conversation and present the bill to the chair of the tax committee if he should want to take a look at the bill.
Where is it?
Okay. So no further questions. I will move on to final testifier, which is Alan Lund. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alan Lund. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities in Minnesota. We represent the 1,200 chaired nonprofits that conduct charitable gaming in Minnesota. And I'd like to start by thanking Representative Cornish for playing our games and supporting us. We sincerely appreciate that. What we did not see in the fiscal note was any possible effect on charitable gaming and what it might have, and what the Daily Fantasy Sports will bring to the party in forms of tax revenue. We see Daily Fantasy Sports as a direct competitor of our business, and a level playing field is important to us. This will be our fourth for-profit competitor that we compete against, and each of those either pay no taxes or as little as 14% of what we pay. So our question would be that, and the request we would have is to either have them treated like us, or even better, us treated like them. We are going to bring in $60 million to the state this year. We're putting $60 million into your communities, and we'd like to see that. We'll take their deal.
Questions of Mr. Lund. Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chair, not so much a question, but just fiscal note issues come up a couple times. I think, you know, and Mr. Marks may be able to better talk about this than I do, but, you know, when we have fiscal notes, they really only measure or attempt to measure what I guess maybe I'd call the sort of first-order effects of a bill passing. So we look at something like this and say, well, if this bill passed, the department is estimating that they need some more revenue agents to or some more law enforcement personnel to enforce the new laws that are in here. But we don't attempt to say that, oh, there's going to be additional cost to treating gamblers, because we don't know if the people who are now going to be using Daly's fantasy sports gambling are perhaps already gambling at the casinos already. And we don't attempt to say, oh, well, they're going to take money from charitable gambling. It's going to cost us this much money. Just as, you know, I know that in some of the school tax credit provisions in the tax committee that talk about providing some sort of a tax credit if you send your child to a private school, they don't attempt to measure how many more kids might go to private school and how much less education funding the state might then have because of those kids now going to a private school. They really only measure and are designed to measure the very sort of narrow effects to the state that I've tried to describe. And so that's not a comment for or against the bill. I guess I just want people to think about that when they think about what's in a fiscal note, and that these other things aren't and probably would be pretty hard to figure out how to measure to actually put into a fiscal note.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a question for Mr. Lund and to Representative Wagenius's point. As I just read through the bill, I don't see why there's any reason to go to tax me because I don't think these people are being taxed at all. Mr. Lund, I know we tax the heck out of you guys. As you read the bill, could you help me out here? Where are they being taxed?
Mr. Lund?
Mr. Chair, Chair Davids. The point that we would make is that we are hoping that they are currently paying the corporate tax rate. We're not even clear that that's happening at this point. So they're, as we would understand it, their top rate would be the 9.5, 9, whatever it is, where ours is 36 with no deductions of any kind.
Well, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lund, I don't even see where they're paying the 9.5.
Mr. Lund?
Mr. Chair, Chair Davids, well, it's my understanding that at some point they were in negotiations with revenue, whether they would need to pay that tax or not. But it would again be our position that if they're going to be doing business here and doing that kind of business as a direct competitor, that we should at least be getting something out of them.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably a question for Representative Knobloch and Representative Cornish, especially given Representative Knobloch's discussion of the fiscal note. I note on the page 4 of the fiscal note, it requires aged in the Department of Public Safety to do a number of things, and then it pays for it. And it shows that there will be an increase in FTEs, a total of 3, I believe, that will be funded. In Representative Cornish's bill, as it currently stands, there's a lack of funding for aged, and the department has reported that it would put in jeopardy the ability to reinspect breweries and distilleries if the current funding becomes law. And so my question is, after the Department of Public Safety has cut the 180 staff positions that will either be cut or go unfilled, Representative Cornish or Representative Knobloch, do you believe that they will actually be able to do this work based on this fiscal note? And then taking into account Representative Anderson's cap on the number of employees, if the department is already over that number of employees, how are they going to hire the 3 people to actually do the job that you're asking them to do?
Representative Knobloch?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilstrom, I think these fiscal notes are looked at in isolation, and with the amendment that was put on, the reason the amendment was put on is because I had talked to Representative Albright and said that, well, we're not really interested in having the state take on an additional $400,000 of cost each year just to regulate this industry, so we're going to have some more fees or revenue coming in to help offset this if, in fact, this is going to go forward. And so my understanding is the amendment is balanced and has enough in additional fees to pay for these 3 additional people. And so within this particular bill, it is, as I understand it, now balanced. And so there isn't a cost to the general fund, and there wouldn't be a need for other services from the Department of Public Safety because they would now be paid for by these people that the amendment is paying for.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Knobloch, so Representative Anderson's language saying that you can't have more than a certain number of employees, this bill would supersede her bill because it was passed after, or her bill would still trump this fiscal note and the requirement to add 3 FTEs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilstrom, I think that this bill, in a sense, is considered in isolation from Representative Anderson's bill. And with the additional fees that it is taking in, it is now balanced, and the assumption is in passing this bill that those people would be, in fact, paid for and hired.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. If Representative Hillstrom's done.
Go ahead.
You know, I hadn't thought of that particular point, but with the Anderson bill, she puts a cap on the number of public employees. And so there would have to be some adjustment in those numbers or language in the bill that would say that this is exempt from the cap. Now, you are correct when you say the last bill passed. That would create an interesting question as to how that cap would be applied. But I'm not interested necessarily in trying to fix the bill, but I think it raises a question because I'm not supportive of what Representative Anderson is trying to do. But I minimally would say that it shows the problems that we're going to encounter if Representative Anderson's language prevails when we're trying to deal with other legislation. But there is that absolute cap, so that would mean that theoretically another state agency or that state agency would have to lay three people off so they could hire and be up, would be within the cap.
Yeah, Mr. Chair,
Nixon's wage and price freeze, it didn't work very well. You know how that went? I think you're old enough, Mr. Chairman, to perhaps remember that. They started to have exemption after exemption until the whole thing just blew up. Some people remember that.
Representative Carlson, I don't remember that. All I remember are these buttons that said win.
That was
Gerald Ford.
But it was interesting, you know, Republican president, no wage and price freeze.
It was a difficult time, and people were.
But my point isn't to argue the philosophy of it, other than the practicality of it was that it didn't work. And I think now we're getting to see the first example of where the freeze on the number of employees is going to be a little bit more complicated than perhaps some people realized initially.
And Mr. Chair, if I can respond to that.
Representative Knobloch.
I guess I would say, Representative Carlson, you know, it does raise an interesting question, but I guess my interpretation would be that, you know, if we choose to, in fact, enact this, and we choose to, in fact, you know, if Representative Anderson's bill would be signed, I guess I would... It would imply that I think these people would be hired, and somehow there would have to be some other savings in personnel found elsewhere.
Yeah. Representative Cornish.
Yeah, they did ask me a question. First of all, they didn't give that hot of an explanation when they wanted more agents that we'd necessarily grant that. And we were all talking about hypotheticals. We aren't seeing anything yet because none of these bills have been acted, Representative Anderson's or mine, and we're a long way down the road. So this is all hypothetical. And just because they asked for more inspectors doesn't mean we're going to give them. Maybe we do want them to have more inspectors and inspect more businesses. So it's all a big hypothesis right now.
Mr. Chairman, you can argue that it's hypothetical because the bills haven't been passed, but we're in the business here of lawmaking. Mm-hmm. And once one of those bills would pass, it very quickly moves from being a hypothetical discussion to the reality of what is the law. And that's why I think we've got something that's a little bit more complicated than perhaps if that bill of Anderson's were to pass, it moves beyond the hypothetical, is my point.
And Mr. Chair, that's why great minds are working on it as we speak. And come to a great solution.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, while I got the floor, I did have a question of Representative Albright or a comment. I was here when we had a big debate about card playing at Canterbury Bound, Canterbury Grounds. Is that the way you say it? But one of the arguments that they made to have so many poker tables was that it wasn't really gambling, or somebody made it. It was a game of skill. And I think we could have, and I don't need to get involved with long debate about what's gambling and what's not, because one might be perceived as a game of skill and another, but there are poker players that say it's a game of skill and it's not really gambling. Then I suppose if you're good at reading, being that we were talking about Canterbury, if you're really good at reading those, the history of the horses, what do they call those sheets that they give out, you know, where you can see the history, I suppose you could argue that that's a game of skill too, understanding what horses have the greatest potential. But I think gambling is gambling, and if you're taking a chance, you're taking a chance, and I'll just stop there.
Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make one last comment. So I'm going to support this bill, but I think that we have to have the money and we have to have the people to regulate them if we're going to pass it. And with the caps that Representative Anderson has put in her bill and the lack of funding that Representative Cornish has put, has ended up in his bill based on the budget targets that he was given by Representative Knobloch, I think what we have here is a potential that the Department of Public Safety is going to have to pick whether they're going to do things like regulation of this, or drug chemistry testing, or firearms examination, or BCA investigators. Those are Sophie's choice that you are setting up with the budget that you have put forward with the language in Representative Anderson's bill. Last I checked, this body was the one that was supposed to set priorities of what we want to fund. And testing firearms that have been used in criminal activity, I would think, would be real important. But there is no exemption in the cap that's placed on the employees. So members, I think we have a long way to go between now and the end, and I would hate to see that we end up putting exemptions in language saying, oh, any bill passed after Representative Anderson is exempted, thereby cutting other areas of the budget that we might think are very high priority.
Any other questions of Mr. Lund? If not, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions to the bill author?
Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers that, based upon the previous testimony, would like to have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Certainly. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sean Ostro, and I'm Manager of Government Affairs for FanDuel.
And Derek Hine, Manager of Government Affairs for DraftKings.
And again, if we could keep it to just a couple of minutes and things that are pertinent to what we're discussing here in the finance part of the bill, please. Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, and I'll be very brief. I understand we were going to discuss the fiscal issue, but I would like to at least take a moment to address a few of the things that were said about the policy that, and Representative Albright made this very clear that this does not change the number of fantasy players in the state. This will not change the number of fantasy operators in the state. This will not change the amount of money that is being played as entry fees into these fantasy games in the state. All this does is create a series of consumer protections, including what was already addressed about making sure that minors are not playing, making sure that employees of the companies are not playing, and ensuring that the people of Minnesota, which has more fantasy sports players per capita than any other state in the country, making sure that those players are playing in games which are protected, which are safe, and are free of any sort of wrongdoing. So I just wanted to address that point, and I'll let Sean handle the other fiscal
issues.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, I would just like to mention a couple of things regarding the impact that it would have on the state of Minnesota from a fiscal perspective. There is currently an income tax component that any person that wins over $600 within a year would be receiving a 1099 from any fantasy sports company. So that is income tax that is staying within the state. We also have had discussions with the Department of Revenue regarding the corporate tax. It is everyone's understanding that this bill would absolutely create the nexus necessary so that every fantasy sports company operating within the state would be paying that corporate tax as well.
Questions of the testifiers? Representative Cornish?
It doesn't look like there's many questions, so I'd just like to make a comment. I would just encourage members to vote for this bill. Life's a gamble. I mean, you spend money in the stock market, it's a gamble. There was hundreds of legislators over my past 15 years that have been going to the banquets around spending hundreds of dollars on poll tabs and different things for ducks, some of this and that. So it's kind of hypothetical to make it look like gambling is such a horrific deal. I mean, And I haven't ever thought that gambling was as addictive as cocaine or whatever they said. And all the people that I've ever seen at these different banquets, I've never run into a problem like that. So anyway, I think a lot of this is hype. And one thing that bugs me, I got to say it, is in different committee meetings I've been in, is when the Joint Religious Council comes in, and Isaiah is kind of an anti-fun, anti-gun group, and they make it look like all the religions are together on that. I'm a Missouri Synod Lutheran. And I don't like religious organizations coming in and say we represent the Jews and the Protestants and the Catholics, because they don't. It's a very small organization, both of them with very few members, and there's hundreds of thousands of opinions like mine that are good people that don't believe in the things that they do. So, and it's not anything disparaging them, they can have it, but just don't represent all of us in that group and make it look like we all believe like alike. So.
Representative Liebling?
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I was going to make a different comment, but I do want to respond to that a little bit because I know they can come back to the table to respond. But, you know, first of all, I don't think they represent, they represent members just like other organizations, and their members are religious members, and some of them are Jews and Protestants and Catholics, and they do. And so, you know, for many years, of course, the right wing has represented, the religious right has come in and done exactly that and kind of made like that they represented the voice of religion on the right. So I find absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, maybe you're just expressing you can have that opinion, Representative Cornish, but I think it's actually high time that we had religious organizations coming and expressing, you know, other views, because obviously religious organizations are diverse. So I think that's perfectly appropriate. But what I wanted to say, though, initially was that, so it's interesting to me that we've got here two representatives of these companies who want to do this or who are already doing it and want to be legal and under this bill. And the things that the two representatives mentioned are almost like, you know, you want the consumer protections, you're talking about you're going to be taxed, and something about we're not going to have more people doing this and all of that. So that makes me wonder why you want the bill. I mean, it almost seems like this is like you've got it made right now. And so I just have to say I'm a little skeptical about that. It makes me, I was kind of intending to vote for the bill, and I kind of now wonder, like, what's going on here because of who's here lobbying for it. So I guess I'd like just a bit more explanation. You know, don't tell me you don't get anything out of it. I guess that's what I'm saying. Tell me what do you get out of it, because I think that's the real issue.
To either of the testifiers?
Mr. Chair and Representative, and I appreciate that. I don't think I've ever testified and had somebody say that they're going to oppose the bill after what I said, but I hope my boss isn't watching this live stream. You make a good point, and I think what we're trying to tackle here is a gray area. Right? We're currently operating in the state, but we're operating in a gray area, much like some of the other tech companies that are out there, the Ubers, the Airbnbs. They exist, and they're trying to work within the framework of laws that previously existed that didn't address what they do. And I think in the process, we're trying to do the right thing for the state in making sure that people are protected, implementing some of the policies and procedures that we've developed internally and making those law. This in no way is meant to be anti-competitive. We're wanting to make sure this doesn't create a barrier to entry for other companies, but I think just clarifying that gray area and making sure that people are protected in the process is the intent.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's always important for us to remember that everyone has the right to come before us to express their point of view and to be treated in a respectful manner. And I suspect the JRLC person, the testifier, could probably more likely source her percentage claim of representation than the counter that was made to her.
Any other discussion or questions of the testifiers?
No.
Any other testifiers?
No.
Mr. Heller? Thank you, gentlemen.
I'd ask that the fantasy people, one of the people would be.
You could identify yourself, please.
My name is Rick Keller. I officially represent Christ Exceptional Minnesota Statute 120B15 and people that are print disabled. I come to testify today, I believe it's 1415 bill, on the 10th of May at the Ways and Means Committee. One thing to consider about fairness and sameness and charity and create a level playing field is provide entertainment, leisure, which is independent, and effectively communicate that these websites are fairly accessible based with people that are blind. People need to have the same opportunity to access this stuff. I would ask the chair that fantasy would yield to a question.
I'm sorry.
Obviously at your obligation to do that or not. I know you don't have that obligation. I'm just asking.
Yeah, Mr. Heller, we're here basically looking at the fiscal note was the reason for this hearing. So okay, I can understand your concern here, and it'll be duly noted, but unless there would be member questions of you, I don't think that other stuff would be.
Yes, there is a fiscal discussion here, and the fiscal, since your summary mentions technology and minute, Office Enterprise Technology formerly asked state agencies, including our lotto system, to be compliant to accessibility regarding web functionality and 504, which is to make sure that content is accessible and usable with assistive technology. So yes, this does have a fiscal note that when we invite e-commerce into this process, is that unfair? I mean, equal, fairness and sameness as relates to how a state agency is required to make stuff accessible for people who have blindness and print disability on the Higher Education Opportunity Act. I think when you don't consider that regarding entertainment, because really the life goal for everybody for future education and employment is also for independent living, which includes, frankly, if you want to do a little gaming or gambling, I think that's appropriate. And if you want to be charitable with that process, including the documents that are not provided online in a timely manner for this committee.
I didn't realize it.
I appreciate that that you allow the yield to the question to fantasy if their web sites are compatible with web content accessibility guidelines 2.0.
Thank you. Any member questions of the testifier?
Don't you dare.
Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Hill.
Thank you.
Representative Albright, unless there's other questions, closing comments.
Thank you for the conversation. I would appreciate your support on the measure before you.
Thank you. And with that, the chair renews the motion to refer HF 1415 as amended to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. And with that, we have concluded our agenda for this evening, so we are adjourned.
Yeah.